Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Shoving Wilco podcast. I am your host, Todd Rossnagel, and it is great to have you along with us. We are so excited for this episode as we will be digging in to Wilco's 13th album, Cousin. But first, I want to make sure you know about some of our previous episodes if you are listening to this episode because of our thoughts on Cousin. You will most certainly want to go back in the archives and listen to the episode just prior to this one. We sat down with Greg Mulvey from Mojo Magazine. Now, we did speak to him prior to the release of Cousin, but I'm here to tell you, now that you have heard Cousin, it's great to go back and listen to some of his insight into the production of Cousin, so you might want to check that out. And speaking of music journalists, our episode with rock critic Greg Kot is, as the kids would say, soaring to the top of the charts. I think I looked yesterday and it was one of the most downloaded, if not the most downloaded, of our episodes here on Shoving Wilco. So head back and see if you want to check out the episode with Greg Kot. It was a fantastic conversation. Touched briefly on some new music, but really Greg was looking back at his interactions with Wilco over the years. And I also want to give a shout out to some of our listeners. Thanks to Brian Sussman. He reached out to us on Instagram with some great kudos. He just started listening, so welcome to the pod, Brian. He had some great feedback, and so we thank him for the follow. And Dara Wayna, she reached out to us to make sure that we knew that Wilco is not necessarily dad rock, but that it's also mom rock. She shared a great story of how her kids have been raised on Wilco, something that today's guest and I, Tim Arnold, can relate to. In fact, there's a t-shirt that says Raised on Wilco. And so, Dara, thank you for that insight. I think maybe we should invite her on the podcast. She'd make for a great guest. If, by the way, if you'd like to get in touch with the show, our email is shovingwilco@gmail.com. You can also message us on the show notes. And so without further ado, we are joined once again by my good friend and lover of the podcast, Tim Arnold. Tim, welcome.
Thank you. Joining us
from Auburn, Alabama, in the
That's right.
And
I was going to say that Wilco has a lot of great merch for kids.
They really do. Yeah. They do. So how are you? Cousin, where were you when you first put it on? Give me insight into how that happened for you.
I was here at the home office, you know. I don't know what the rules are, but for some reason I got the vinyl delivered Wednesday, I think. So it was out a few days before. And, you know, every time I've ordered the vinyl, it shows up on the day or days before or whatever. It's just sitting on the doorstep, and I run and I pull tab and get the thing out and put it on the record player in the home office, you know?
Yeah. Well, I have a unique listening experience for this album because I was, that Friday that it dropped, I was getting on a plane in New Orleans to fly to Austin to see them for record release day. And it took everything in me not to listen on the drive to New Orleans because it was there. It was right there on my phone. It was ready for me to stream. But I promised myself, as soon as wheels went up, I was just gonna listen. So I had my headphones in,
and the duration's probably about the same as a flight to Austin, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. The timing was perfect, and then landed and had the afternoon to really kind of soak it up prior to heading to the concert. And the concert was fantastic. They had a few debuts of some of the new songs, and so that was fantastic, and we'll talk about that as we get into it. But overall, your thoughts on Cousin. I think I texted you that I am ready to declare this is the best album since Whole Love.
I would maybe agree with that, with, you know, the right to retract or revise. There's a lot of great songs between here and there, but you know, interestingly, it coincides with some of our chapter breakdown that Star Wars, Schmilko, Ode to Joy are in a different era from The Whole Love, and even right before it, the Wilco album.
Yeah, you could almost point to post-pandemic Wilco as being a sound in and of itself.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I had two things leapt out at me the first few listens, trying to gauge a theme. And one of them is a return to the more experimental soundscape. I mean, that was publicized by rock critics and stuff saying the Wilco record's coming and you're going to like it. You know, old school fans are going to like it. And we did. You know, I think Kate LeBond has had a huge influence on that. The sound has gotten more, you know, bubbly and electronic than it has been in other places. And with Kate, we get a return to the sort of outside producer influence that we had discussed before in a previous podcast with, you know, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot and Jim O'Rourke's influence on those records. So it was nice to see something new pouring into these guys. And I think, and this is the first of the two things that stood out to me, there's a certain kind of luscious femininity on some of these songs.
And interesting take.
It was clearly there on the duet that they did with Feist and You and I on the Wilco album. And it crept in slowly, but it's there. There's a certain, you know, Kate's put her stamp on this, and I think it's awesome. I think it's really great.
You know, one of the things that we talked about with Kate, and if you listen to Kate's music, I think you brought this out. There are not a lot of like huge guitar solos on any of her records. And so there is, if there is one criticism of this album, and I think you would agree with this. So I'll say it this way.
Vociferously.
So, you know, we've talked about how, and I am not a record producer, but I would think that a good record producer would produce for the room, the talent that's in the room. And I think she's done a phenomenal job of producing for Glenn. I mean, Glenn and John, the rhythm on this album stand out in massive ways.
Yeah, totally agree. We haven't heard John this present in the mix in a while, it feels like.
But that being said, there are some tracks, there are some of these songs where I am just waiting for Nels to explode.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, that tees up my second comment. The thing that stood out to me overall on this record is there's a certain calmness, a maturity to this album. Mm. And it makes it very obvious, reflective to Cruel Country. I see Cruel Country in a new light with this record. And, you know, initially I wanted some of that rock and roll you're talking about. I wanted this experimental sonic kitchen sink, like that big cacophony of Via Chicago and things like that. And it doesn't seem to be here. And part of me was saying, oh, these songs are dragging, you know, they're slow and this moodiness is pervasive. And I think really what it is that maturity, you know, this band is strutting. And they're doing it confidently, you know, this easygoing maturity in their songwriting.
Let's get into this track by track, Tim. We will go through this. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on every single track because we may have some favorites and we may not. It begins with Infinite Surprise, and it sort of just picks up almost like it's in the middle of the song.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love that it starts in progress, sort of. And I love that it starts with the ticking. You know, it's almost a signature of this record. To me, we talked about this before. Cruel Country had, hearing it, a big presence of the Grateful Dead. And I feel like in this record and what they're doing and starting it off with that ticking clock, it's Pink Floyd.
Yes, yes, yes.
There's just a lot in there in my hearing, you know. I mean, and it goes back to some of the maturity they seem to be going through their own influences almost, you know. A few records back, Schmilko was like a big star record. Star Wars had a lot of big star on it too, you know. But even Infinite Surprise has one of these big, heavy Lennon McCartney flares on there in the Mellotron.
It's good to be alive. It's good to be alive. It's good to know we die.
But even that, think about it. That's a late era, mature kind of Beatles reference to put that in.
And I love Jeff's lyrics. It is indeed good to be alive. It's good to know we die. Because unless you can begin to realize the tension in both of those, I mean, that in many ways is the secret to life. I will also say I love the ticking in the beginning, and I also love what sounds to me like the concluding fireworks. It sounds like the end of the 4th of July celebration, where it's just this. I could see them maybe next year, the 30th anniversary of Wilco, being in Chicago, and this ends a set, and there's this the conclusion to this song, and we look up, and all of a sudden
with real fireworks. Yes,
that's right.
I wrote the same thing down, but it's clearly digital.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
just
yeah.
Dying to know how they created that. And it reminds me of the first track on Whole Love, the way that Art of Almost starts with the sound of the drives gearing up,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just dying to know what they put into that to make those fireworks. But great opening track.
And I mentioned this on one of our Instagram stories right as the release. I filmed this in Austin. For me, and I know I'm jumping all the way to the end here, but for me, it's the bookends. Infinite Surprise, yeah. Fantastic opener, Meant to Be. I mean, we're going to talk about Meant to Be. I mean, that song is fantastic.
We've mentioned this. This band has a history of sending you off with a great, they know how to end a record. This is not unique to like, wow, that last song's really good. They know what a signature is. They know how to announce something, and they know how to send you off.
As much as I love Cousin and declaring it the best album since Whole Love, and we just got done talking about one of my favorite tracks on the album, the next track, not so much.
Doesn't do it for you.
10 Dead is... not so much. It's the cut. It's if we're going to start bench cut, it's going to be my cut.
Well, and friend to friend, you said to me in text, what is not an inside joke because we mentioned it in a podcast. This is your empty condor.
This is my empty condor.
Which is how I felt on that.
10 dead, 10 dead, now they're all 10 dead. Turn on the radio. This is what they said.
Well, I've got a hot take that might intrigue you enough to give it a fresh listen.
Go for it.
For one, this is another one of those tracks that John's bass is up high in the mix, and it's not as tricky as some of the walking stuff that he is really masterful at doing. It's just locking it down on the low end, and I just love hearing it that pronounced. But the twisted fan theory I have on this one is that Jeff is telling a story through the mind of a serial killer. You know, it's dark. It's moody. Listen to these sound shifts. Some of these things coming out of Nels and Jeff and the guys. I feel like they're telling us the psychology that's going on to me. And the psychology that's going on here. And the lyric that did it for me was, what's one more to me? Beside the sea.
One more to me.
10 more, 11 more. What's more? He's like, he's listening to the radio just expose his own murders, and he's wondering if he's going to catch up to him. Hollow Honeycomb. This is a psycho, a serial killer. Righteous. That's just my take.
I woke up this morning and I went back to bed.
We move from 10 dead to Levy.
Levy's great.
Levy is great. It is growing on me. And when I think of Levy, for those of us in South Louisiana, when we think of Levy, we have thoughts, right? I mean, I have thoughts on what a levy is designed to do, what it's there for. But this is not that kind of levy that Jeff is talking about. It's more of an emotional levy that he's riffing on. So again, I love this song. I think it is in that category of songs that are growing on me.
And they do that. You know, most Wilco records need a few listens to digest it. You know, the complexity in the sound. I'm still hearing things. I'm still hearing things on other records.
Yeah.
Takes time.
Yep.
But that's why they give us a single, right? Evicted's next track on this record. And that's clearly the single. And listening to it in context here, it makes sense why it's a single. It sounds like it could almost have belonged on Cruel Country. But then when you put it in context of this whole thing, plus you really hear Kate's flourishes come out and Pat's kind of sunny California thing. This is a great first track.
I love Evicted. I think of the two songs that they released prior to the album, the one song that has grown on me more is Cousin. I absolutely love Cousin. And it really did get me, I know we're jumping ahead here, but Cousin really did get me excited for the album Cousin, because there was a lot more experimentation there, whereas Evicted was a little bit more of a straightforward pop song, if you will. And it's a great song. There's no question. And to your point, I think it fits wonderfully on this album. So we move from Evicted to probably one of my top tracks, not probably, one of my top tracks on this album, Sunlight Ends. That start is just awesome.
Yeah, and I love hearing the way it crashes into the pretty little melody, you know? And Glenn's drums are, it feels like a set that we've never heard before, you know? Big and open, kind of old set of drums or something. It's really unique, I think, in the band's sound we've heard before.
Well, Tim, I love the lyrics on Sunlight Ends. I think it is the kind of lyrics that Jeff, I've really grown to love about Jeff. You're the kind of mountain stream anyone can cross. You're not the kind of mountain stream anyone can cross. You're the kind of flashing sign that only gets you lost. It kind of reminds me of the way he'll take a visual and flip it. There was Bird Without a Tail. There was a man with a double deed who sowed his garden full of seed. When the seed began to grow, it was like a garden full of snow, and it just continues to go. When the snow began to melt, it was like a ship without a
belt. But didn't Jeff say that came from an old poem?
It did come from an old poem, but it makes me wonder...
Well, this one does, too.
Oh, it does?
It does. That's a fascinating story I've been dying to tell you.
Well, there you go.
I'm between books. I'm one of those people. What's that Japanese term for a pile of books that you never are going to read all of them? Next to my bed, I have just a wall of books under the windowsill. And I'm between books, and I wasn't ready to start something new, so I pulled a book of Rumi poetry off. I'll just read this for a couple of days, give my brain a reset before I pick something up. And this is, I don't know, Saturday night? I'd already had several listens of this record, and I look down, and I read this Rumi poem, and I wish I had it in front of me. But that that line, "You're not the kind of city street anyone can cross," is taken and modified from a Rumi poem. Whatever it was in the poem just leapt off, and I heard the melody in my head. And I tell you, I've never felt so connected to Jeff Tweedy than to know that I was reading the same poetry that he was reading when he wrote this song. And I guarantee it, because there's another poem. It's either part of the same poem or another poem a few little bit later that talks about sunlight, dust dancing in the sunlight. Like, Jeff was reading Rumi when he wrote this song. I guarantee it.
You dance like the dust in the light, where the sun comes in. The sunlight ends.
And sales of Rumi just shot through the roof.
Right. But I love the song. I love the stripped down nature of the song. I love the start. I love the keys. Just a fantastic song. We go from Sunlight Ends to A Bowl and a Pudding. And this is probably top of the list for songs that continues to grow on me. When I first heard it, I'm not sure I really appreciated the echo on Jeff's voice.
Well, and also usually on first hearing, I just thought it was, you know, a big echo, a big reverb. But the closer you listen to it, it's a different take.
It is.
So it was a clear choice. You know, usually you double take lyrics, you're kind of doing a bit of a harmony. You're giving a certain density to your vocal. But this was, I think he's trying to put voices in this guy's head, you know, a little bit of schizophrenia to the thing.
I think he's talking to himself. I think he's talking to that other side of himself.
And I got to tell you, the sort of sonic vibe of this song, as I was hearing it and learning it and feeling it, I wasn't expecting a breakup song. I didn't know this one was going to be a breakup song. But he says, "And the one you love is not me." You know, when you walk away, this song's a heartbreaker.
It really begins to take shape when you can think of some, and I'm not saying that this is in this camp, but when you can take some of Jeff's love songs and realize that he's talking about himself, his old self versus his new self, and that breakup, that just brings it into a whole different perspective.
That's deep, man. That's a deep take. But it just, even the music here, I love, like, Glenn's steady little off rhythm kind of shuffle with John's pulsing bass. The rhythm section's really here and large, as subtle as it might be. Nobody's getting real crazy. I'm not sure Glenn has any big kind of polyrhythm, like "I'm Trying to Break Your Heart" or something, right, on the whole record. It's mature. It's mellow. These guys are confidently playing great tunes.
We move from A Bowl and a Pudding to Cousin. It sounds like church bells coming in at the end. Do you hear that, Tim?
I'll take another listen. I didn't. I'm too stuck on something that you already straightened me out on the timeline, but I was late to the party viewing it. I feel like Jeff must have been watching The Bear when he wrote this song.
Yeah, no, I believe this was written prior to the recording of The Bear, but maybe he had an advanced copy.
They're just trying to get and make sure there's some more tracks in the next season, I think. So, just tell me this song, Cousin, is not going to be on The Bear someday.
It's almost guaranteed to be on The Bear.
Yeah, but I mean, it's an energetic. It's the second single. It was a great one to put out there. A few good turns, but to me, this was another chance to go back to what you were saying for like a Via Chicago kind of bridge or something. But it just kind of repeats and ends, and I just got a little frustrated in my love of this band. I don't want them to feel like we're living in the past and they can't grow and change, but don't repeat what you've done, but do the things that we all love. You know, where are these amazing sounds like You Are My Face and At Least That What You Said? Even On and On has just an epic solo. They don't all have to be Impossible Germany, but it's like you said, when are they going to let Nels loose? And there is enough places on this record where I said, you know what, just go another 8 bars and let Nels off the leash, please. Just do what you're doing. And I feel like Kate LeBlanc had like a no solo mandate. We're not doing a rock record, gentlemen.
So, Tim, I want to go back because you're unpacking something that I think is worthy of explaining a little bit more. And I failed to do so on the very first track, Infinite Surprise. So for our audience at home, I am going back to the first cut, but for a very important reason, because, Tim, I think your point is valid. There is a part of this album, and you could say that there's been a part of like this for the last couple of albums where we've wanted this kind of this unleashing of the sound of Wilco that we remember from years past. In Infinite Surprise, I was in Austin for Infinite Surprise, which I don't think it was the live debut, but they did let loose. There is a part of this song that they did just, it's not huge, but it was enough, and I absolutely loved it. That being said, Tim, as you can hear from this recording in Austin, I think this is going to be a live staple for years to come. I only say that, I share that story with you to know that some of these songs live, I think, will evolve and become a thing live. We move to the next track on the album, Pittsburgh. Not too many songs are the titles. I mean, we have Via Chicago, where Chicago is referenced, but it's not that often that we get a city reference in a title.
And nothing really gives it away in the lyric. I'm still trying to figure out what Pittsburgh means to us. But this may be the most Wilco song on this record. The acoustic start is so Jeff, you know, and Glenn's sneaking in a little bit with his percussion, his little rattles. And then it just hits you with this big sonic Pink Floyd wall of sound.
They had this song on the set list in Austin and they did not play it. They skipped it. And I was really disappointed. And there is just something familiar and very Jeff-ish, if that's a word. There is something very familiar and also uncomfortable with the TSA going through your clothes. That's right. I mean, who wants that?
I felt like this one could have been on Ode to Joy or something. Some of Jeff's solo stuff, which is, like you said, that was pandemic Wilco, which had a different vibe. And who knows the songwriter's journey? This could be something that he had been carrying around and finally fit on this record, but is this the song? Is this the only solo that's on the whole record? And it's so low key. We get a little bit of Nels kind of flighty triplets like on Side with Seeds, and then it wants to roar at the end, but the feedback just kind of falls away and dresses up Jeff's acoustic rephrasing. It's the same thing. I just keep wanting to yell at this record. Give the guy 8 bars. Give us something. You know? I mean, Impossible Germany has like 3 guitar solos in one.
Yeah.
In one track. I'm like, I don't understand why you won't give us what we want. Give us what we want. More Nels.
Well, we move from Pittsburgh to Soldier Child. And this was one of the live debuts in Austin. And what a fantastic song. Just a tap your foot kind of song. The guitar solo at the 3:15 mark is just absolutely beautiful. I love Soldier Child.
It's great. I thought this one could have been on Cruel Country too, which I think you had told me, right? They were kind of writing these together and said, you know, these 10 songs here and these 10 songs here, and decided to split them up like that. But it's a really cool song. To me, some of the lyric content makes me think this person may be singing about the same guy from I'll Fight.
Interesting. Across the table, act like you're invisible, not just high, unavailable. Now that I'm over, smile.
I don't know why I have to make these connections.
Like a tiger, afraid. I fought like a child.
All right, so that brings us to the last track on this album. And what I believe, just my opinion here, is the best song on the album. I cannot say, I mean, from the very first listen, which is very rare for a Wilco song, from the very first listen, Meant to Be is just absolutely beautiful. And for us to have the some Jeff optimism shining through, I still believe you're the only one. As someone who has been married a very, very long time, I can't help but appreciate the sentiment in this song. This way. The song just feels alive, vibrant, and reminding at least me why Wilco remains a musical force to be reckoned with.
I think you're right. And I don't know if I'm connecting dots across this whole record, which is a little moody, a little dark in places. And, you know, death is not something that Jeff has shied away from addressing before. But this one, and of course we know too much, right? I mean, the Beatles were bigger than Jesus, but in the day and age of the internet and Jeff cranking out a couple of books, we know more about Jeff Tweedy than we ever knew about John Lennon. So I'm connecting dots again, but I think that this song and some of the other stuff on this record, he's facing the mortality of his wife, Susie. And that may be the scariest and most emotionally driving thought anyone could have.
Great take. I'll offer a different take. What if Meant to Be is written to the fans of Wilco, that he is talking about the love that Wilco has for its fans and that we have for the band? Do you still believe, here we are 30 years later, do you still believe in Wilco? Our love is meant to be. Each day is longer than the one before, fewer left, less and less. I need you more. And in fact, Jeff talks about this often from stage, of just how the personal connection between Wilco and its fans. Cousin. 13th album, and this will bring us to next year, which will mark 30 years of Wilco, and we'll be hearing more and more of this album as they begin to tour more and more with some of these songs. So overall, absolutely love this album. I think it's the best in years. And I think it's a strong effort.
You know, we could spend podcast time talking about all their side projects and solo things. These guys just keep making great music. But to me, even Jeff's solo stuff, Nell's really kind of wild experimental stuff where he does let loose. John and Pat's Autumn Defense, which is so like sonically lovely, what those two guys do together. Glenn's percussion explorations, just all of it is so good. None of it is as good as when these six guys are together making music.
We want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the new album, Cousin? If you are listening to this point in this episode, we know for a fact that you have an opinion about this album and this band. So be sure to leave us a comment. Leave us a comment in the Spotify or the Apple Podcast link, and email us your thoughts. It's shovingwilco@gmail.com is our email address. We would love to hear from our listeners. Tim, this has been fantastic. It's been it's fantastic to catch up with you. The first couple of episodes, we were rocking and rolling. Then I kind of went off on this side journey with these other guests. I felt like I was cheating on you. But it's great to have you back on the pod.
Well, I love doing it. It's good to be making something, you know. We've had these conversations for years and years, but to hear the stuff that you're bringing into the table, you've done a great thing with Shoving Wilco, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Well, it has been an absolute joy of mine to record these episodes and to really meet so many of our listeners and to share some of these stories of Wilco, the band that we love. This will do it for another episode of the Shoving Wilco podcast. I want to thank Tim Arnold for joining us, and I want to thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode, or if you enjoy the Shoving Wilco podcast, please share it with a friend. Until we meet again, everyone, have a great day.